And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't hear what you said. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to Warriors Plus Minus. We are back again, and guess what? All of us are available. None of us are absent. Because that's what we do, ain't that right, Slater? We show up.
There's a new rest policy.
Yes, right. Non-national TV. This is non-national TV. So
we're always national, sir. We're always national. We are national TV. We've got the boss man, Tim Kawakami. We've got Ethan Strauss, our resident pot stirrer, and the great Anthony Slater. Fellas, camp has begun. It is here. I feel pretty good.
Can I say something about these Warriors fans? They are excited. I posted literally a probably 19-second clip of a scrimmage from the Warriors' first practice that included a little fast break, a little Oubre, throws it over to Steph, throws it to Wiggins,
a little
whatever.
Kent Bazemore giving up the baseline.
Yeah, you know, give up the baseline. Wanamaker can't get over from the weak side.
Break it down.
Smiley Geach spreading the floor for the starters. But my point is the Warriors fans ate it up. They're really hyped. It is good to see that from a fan base that, like, they know maybe some of them are a little delusional. This is not going to end in a title this year, but there are people just excited to see hoops.
I'm picturing Barney Gumbel just licking booze off the ground is what I'm picturing. Throwing it out there.
But I'm not even up front, man. After that call yesterday, I couldn't believe we did a Zoom interview with Steph, and I walked away with not only the story that I was doing that day, but a story for the next day. I was like, what the heck is this? Like, this is crazy. I haven't felt that in a long time. Yeah, I got some. Remember how we used to have to do that in, like, the locker room in the playoffs? TK would say, hey, you guys are writing today, and then you're going to write tomorrow, and you had to go get something extra. We haven't been in a position to do that in a long time. I felt like a real reporter yesterday.
We have stuff. And we can talk about the two absences. I mean, that's... And we have stuff, and then we have stuff with them when Draymond and James Wiseman come back to practice, which probably won't be real soon. But everybody's been dying for this. If you like sports, if you like covering sports, watching sports, following sports, and you include the Warriors in that, this is the start of real stuff for us, for the Bay Area. 49ers is fine, absolutely. Giants, absolutely. But given the tenor of the times, the Warriors have been the predominant team. And it's good to start talking about them. You know, like, it's just a blur. They were 15-50, but there wasn't a lot other than D'Angelo Russell. Is he going to make it? Okay, he's not. Now it's, you know, now what do they do? But it's great to have stuff to talk about. Good to have Synergy Sports break down that video, Slater. We get some touches on that one and this, how many pick and roll action they went into.
The lineups were interesting, I thought.
You know what? No Michael Mulder in there? I was like, I was already upset. Like, come on, yeah. Steve. Come on.
Oh, no. Mulder.
Break down the rotations.
Out.
Of the,
Mulder was out. On the Zoom yesterday. Mulder did the Zoom
okay,
call.
I'm surprised he was Tim didn't come
on. He's working IT for them already. I you know, there might be booze on the floor, but it's an interesting flavor. I will say that. It's intriguing. There's some hoppiness. You can't quite place it. It's not necessarily going to win any competitions. It's not some watered down PBR. I get it. I get where the fans are coming from. It's a situation where, as you say, Slater, we don't think they're going to win a championship, but there's a lot of intrigue on just what it's going to look like and how good it's going to be.
Tim referenced the fact that James Wiseman and Draymond Green were not at the initial practice and, I've been told, are unexpected to be at practice all week, very unlikely to play in the preseason opener Saturday. Earliest they would likely be back in team activity would be next week. And remember, this thing is coming rapid. There's two preseason games next week, but there's not that many practices before. We are sitting here talking on Tuesday. The regular season opener in Brooklyn is 2 weeks from today. So it's coming up quick. And, you know, as Steve Kerr said in his press conference, you could try to put two and two together on why Draymond Green and James Wiseman aren't at practice. But what we can tell you for sure is that they are very likely out at least a week. And that is a problem, an early problem.
Can I just say first that I love Steve Kerr? I love how Steve Kerr played that whole press conference. Like, Steve Kerr is that dude.
Yeah. If you guys put two and two together and we're not, he loves those situations where he can't say what everybody's thinking and we can't say what everybody's thinking. That's where he likes to, that's his playground. But
do you think he loves most that Raymond Ritter's behind the laptop trembling?
I wanted a video of Raymond on that one. That's what I wanted.
Yeah. Ritter looking up. Ritter reading HIPAA policy feverishly.
No, but Ethan, Wiseman is the big deal, right? Right? You were going to say Wiseman is a big deal.
Yeah, it's bad. It's not good. It's disappointing. And as Slater said, that's a valuable beginning of training camp. You don't want to get off on the wrong foot, especially when the opener is a couple weeks from now and he's got no NBA experience. There was no summer league at all. I think that's a pretty big setback for him personally and for the Warriors if we are expecting him to fill the starting role quickly.
Yeah, I think he's not going to start, right? I mean, at least to start the season. I don't think there's any way they can really jigger that in there. And you know, if Marquese Chris is playing well at all, and I think he's fine, then I think James Wiseman's timetable to become a starter has slowed down significantly. You know, it's only 5 days, but it's their only training camp. And then those exhibition games start coming up. And remember last year, like, this is when Marquese Chris, oh my God, Marquese Chris, he can play. Like, they decided that in about 5 days. My theory is they decided that D'Angelo Russell wasn't really going to work in about 5 days. So as later, when he wrote that, I thought about it. Yeah, it's just a week. It feels like nothing. But when you're trying to reformulate a team and reprogram, what is it, like five new guys to the rotation or however many it's going to be, these are important just to get a feel for it. And Draymond not being there is less of a big a deal. Obviously, he's a veteran. He's been through this. But just to get him next to everybody for the first time, they're going to have to play it through the season. So I think we're looking at, you know, I don't know that they were going to have a fast start anyway, especially starting on the road like they are. But it might get really clunky early on, and they might have to work through it in the middle of the regular season, as opposed to maybe much more of a finished product by say the first month. I think they will not be a finished product by like until maybe mid-January, maybe later.
The only way this is a problem for Draymond is if Draymond's just not yet in shape and he was relying on the first week to get in shape. That pushes his physical timeline back. We all understand mentally Draymond, you know, he's all the way there. He's ready for the opener right now from a brain standpoint. That's the thing for Wiseman is like this is such a onboarding process that is being pushed back. And my main point that you guys have referenced is these five practices are like full go. Veterans are there. There's scrimmages. Everyone's engaged. The practices might go 2.5 hours. There's a lot of liveliness in the gym. And it's a welcome to the show type week. Whereas we also know what's a midseason practice like when we walk in there. Oh, Steph's over there getting treatment. You know, a couple young guys are doing one-on-one. Wiseman will be over there with, like, you know, Jaren Collins doing, like, jump hooks. Like, it's all individual work. It's on your own. It's, hey, sorry, you're a professional. Like, you're going to have to improve by yourself. This was the week you form as a team, and James Wiseman's doing that through Zoom, essentially.
And, you know, how much individual work did he get before all this? And I know it's hard to say. We were saying on the show.
I mean, like, were you watching social media? Yeah. Did you see all that work he was getting?
Yeah. You're right. He's done.
Does he have workout equipment wherever he's living? A lot of those guys live in those apartments around the Chase area. I'm not sure where Wiseman's at.
He doesn't have a place yet, right? I mean, that's part of the initial process of moving.
And gyms
here
are closed. He's going to come back looking like the old Wiseman. I don't know what he's going to come back as. It's tough.
I very much don't worry about the physical aspect of Wiseman. I think he's going to come back, and in the gym, he will have 7 alley-oop dunks in practice one if he's
You don't think he's going to come in looking like Brandon Wright? He's going to...
It's just more the comfort level, you know, it, particularly with just how condensed this preseason is. Usually training camps, what, like 8 days, 9 days, 10 days of practice before you get one preseason game? And then it's like 6 preseason games, almost too many, right? By the end of the preseason, it's like, why are they still doing this? This is not what this preseason is going to be like. So I'm not going to ready to say it ends the competition for starting center, but it very much makes Marquise Chris or Kevon Looney the favorite and Wiseman at the bottom of that three list. Unless, I'd say the only way that changes is if he's ready to go next week and he's just awesome. And it's like, okay, we can't really ignore. I know this is day one, but he's the best center in the gym.
But also chemistry is going to be important. This is not a thing where it's like, yo, let's find somebody to throw in because we're already set. Like, part of what will make them good will be how they fit together and how they play together and how fast they can gel. Like, that's going to be a big deal. They're not going to overwhelm people with talent. So they got, like, it matters. It matters a lot. You can already see, like, him being in a game and not knowing where to go and everybody's trying to point him in the right direction. Like, you can see how this is playing out. These are the margins that will determine in many ways if John Hollinger is right in their 11th seed or if they're a 6th seed, right? It's like, it's all that little stuff. It won't be talent unless, like Slater says, this dude is just next and he gets out dominant. There's nothing anybody can do about that, right? A little weak absence, 2 week absence won't do that, won't do anything. But if he's just a rookie who's good with some potential, like, yeah, it matters. It matters that they've played with Marquise Chris already. That type of stuff matters. That's why they aren't worried about the Draymond Green absence, because, like, yo, we already got 7-8 years of Draymond, so that's okay. But the Wiseman has played 3 games in, 2 years, so... I think this is a big deal, and I think this automatically makes him say, now we pump the brakes, right? Like, Marquise Chris, you're the starter. Take your time.
They didn't want a team with Draymond and Steph and Klay before he got hurt. Well, I guess Klay got hurt before they drafted Wiseman, but they just wouldn't have wanted anybody to think, okay, you're on par with those guys, because that's not how this team works. And okay, they did it with Durant, but that was a whole different thing. They just weren't going to do that, so I think they were ready to make sure there wasn't this huge hype about him. And now that he's not going to be practicing for a week and going to miss at least the first exhibition game, yeah, I definitely can feel that. Can you just picture, like, he goes one way, Draymond one, go the other way, and there's, like, a little bit of shouting going on the court, like, you know, in his first 2 defensive possessions? And you could see that happening anyway. He's 19, but now for sure, you know, is he in drop coverage? Is he supposed to jump out on a pick and roll?
And we're going
to
hear it now.
We're going to hear it.
With no fans, it's going to
echo. Ethan, you might be yelling at yourself down there, knowing how this is going to go. So
I hope you let us in.
I can just see how that's going to work. And I don't think they want to put him out there right. Put him out there against the Brooklyn Nets on TNT. You know, go switch out on Durant and don't let him get by. You know,
play 8 minutes in the opener all against the second unit now.
Yep. Now he can match up against Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan. You know.
They might be very soft with him on those first two, because those are marquee national TV. People would be frothing to get a look at Wiseman. And if he struggles, you know, in those sparkling environments, I think they want to avoid that. So I could see him, like, them really giving him his first test, like, third game in the regular. I think they go to, like, Chicago and then Detroit or something like that. I felt like Marcus had a good segue in there. He mentioned Hollinger.
Yeah.
And I was waiting for the segue, but
that was pretty good, man. You didn't stick the landing though.
You didn't.
That was the lob that James Wiseman's going
to miss. No. You got to shift to, speaking of, how do we do a podcast with Zach Harper and you don't know to do that?
Nah, I do no look lobs, or you were supposed to catch you the nugget and you just didn't do it.
Speaking of Hollinger,
he's got the Warriors finishing 11th in the West, and John's a really sharp guy. He is always on top of it. I don't agree with him on 11th, but I can see what he's saying. I can see that all the things we've been mentioning, I think we all think they'll probably finish higher than 11th, but Steph is going to be incredibly isolated on offense. We don't know if Oubre and Wiggins can do enough to take some of that heat off. We don't know what Draymond's going to come back like. We don't know where some of the other shooting is going to be. Some of the depth is, you know, let's see. I mean, I think it's better than last season, would have to be, but we don't know. And if you say, I don't know, you know, there's a lot of ways that could go wrong other than Steph just go be incredible. And we all think that's possible, but it might not be on the 50% side. It might be a little lower than that. Was he saying that, you know, they're worse than who? Dallas and Phoenix and, you know, like, we could name the teams.
Portland Utah.
Injuries have to be considered here, because I think often when fans see these previews, people think of it like everybody's playing over 70 games. That's just how they think about it. And I think sometimes you got to look at a situation and go, it's really a coin flip as to whether Steph gets through the season swimmingly or it goes bad. And if it goes bad, this is not the kind of roster that can generate offense without Steph.
Nobody makes a prediction based on that. Like, you can't.
But they should. But they should. I think it should be incorporated.
So then what can you actually predict?
Well,
if LeBron pulls his groin, you got to take off 15 games in case LeBron pulls his groin.
First of all, I think there's track record where LeBron tends to be healthier than most
superstars.
Except
the year before, he pulled his groin and was out for the rest of the year.
He did pull his groin.
It literally happened. Yeah.
It's weird to keep saying pull his groin, but we keep saying it. But I think with Steph, there is more of a track record of having injuries. And I think that you would assume he gets through the season, but it's not uncommon for him to have an absence. And you have to incorporate that if he has any kind of absence at all, there's no net to catch the trapeze artist. There's no, there just isn't the roster as I see it right now, unless somebody steps up. How are they going to score if Steph misses any time? How are they going to score when he's on the bench?
But then the prediction is Steph is going to miss time and they're going to finish 11th. It can't be, Steph might play 70 games and they might finish it. Like, it's like you're saying, yeah, Steph is not going to play the whole year and they're going to finish 11th.
72 game season. So, I mean, I think Ethan's made this point before. If Steph misses 15 games, which he has done at least three or four
what
times
do they go
before,
in those 15
yeah,
games?
Yeah, that would be, and that's a massive chunk of the season. You know, it's a big chunk in an 82 game season, in a 72 game season, and they go, what, 2-13? You know, I mean, that could be it right there.
COVID-19 lingers out there to knock anybody out for 2 weeks. And so that is a concern on, like, you lose your depth, you potentially lose Steph at some point. But on the same time, 48 guys across the league announced have tested positive. There's going to be a lot of teams that might have to suffer through some really bad stretches this year. It's just going to be weird. I don't even know if every team's going to play the same amount of games. Like, you know, when we talk about differing swing factors this year, that's one we can't really calculate in, but that's a weird one.
The Warriors are starting off on this big East Coast trip. There's a chance that if you don't have an East Coast trip in the first half, West Coast teams don't play on the East Coast in the second half, right? They could just chop off the schedule and say, we are not going to have people traveling across the coast. You're just going to play in the West. I kind of thought that was going to happen anyway. I guess it's not, at least in the first half.
I thought they were going to go like six games against the Lakers and Clippers and Suns. Like, don't even go to the East.
They might do that in the second half. I mean, they've certainly left open that possibility. But the Warriors are getting their East. You know, they're going to play in the East. That's going to happen. I think they wanted the Brooklyn and the Milwaukee game for sure. That was going to happen. So they've got to get the Warriors out there for sure in the first half, and then they'll just make do in the second half. Whether that's good or bad for the Warriors, who knows? It's a bit of a strain just to go on the road to start, but, you know, maybe just get it out of the way, and that's it, and then don't have to worry about it anymore.
As a quick aside, I'm going to be writing about it. National TV schedule is a little weird. A little weird, I have to say. Just
first, it feels
decisions.
Like it's all national TV games, right? Like, it feels like there are a gazillion of them.
Yeah, at 14 for the Pelicans getting as many as the Warriors, the Celtics, any other team except for the Lakers, that raised my eyebrows, and there's some pretty big eyebrows. That was very
one
odd.
One for Atlanta was weird to me, too. Like, just one for the Hawks was weird.
Oh, trust me, I was talking yesterday with some Atlanta people. They're not happy about it.
I wonder how much of this is back-ending. Like, they got a second half they can put together, and they're seeing how everybody is, and these national TV rules, like limiting how many games they can use, that might be out the window. They might just have no rules for scheduling, and if Atlanta's good, they just put them on a bunch. If the Warriors are still good, they'll put a, you know, like, I just think they're just leaving the second half to total improvisation. But I'm surprised that Atlanta's only one game too, but no question.
I do think one of the things that was really interesting about Hollinger's analysis, that, you know, perhaps, you know, in the Bay, I think people underestimate it. It's just how bad the Warriors were with Steph those first few games. And he might be putting too much on it, but I do think we act like it didn't happen, right? Like, and it does add some uncertainty, but also at the same time, like, this idea, I think a lot of people are basing everything on the old Warriors. And I think that's something that happens outside of the Bay Area, where it's like, oh, they're not a championship team anymore. They're done. Whereas I feel like in the Bay Area, we understand, like, that there was a time before the championship, right? There was a time they were a sixth seed, and, like, we can envision that. But it feels like everybody outside are like, ah, it's over. They're not going to win a championship. So now they are awful, right? And there is the room for some middle ground that I think some people miss.
One of the biggest differences between, the biggest difference, in my opinion, between last season and that start, that 1-3, 1-4 start, whatever it was. And this season is the wings, where I remember going into last season's camp, and Willie Cauley-Stein's out right away, which forces them to put Marquise Chris on the roster and forces them to cut Alphonso McKinney. But even before they cut McKinney, I remember writing a story about how they may have just gone to the most loaded position, small forward position in NBA history, Kevin Durant backed up by Andre Iguodala, to the thinnest ever. You had Alec Burks, who had injury troubles early. Glenn Robinson was literally the only healthy wing. And then Damian Lee was on a two-way. Those were their only three wings. And then now they have not now reverted back to Kevin Durant backed up by Andre Iguodala, but they have Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre. And that is a much firmer middle ground than what they had going into last season with Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson, Damian Lee.
Yeah, when we all remember the Clippers game. I mean, that was horrendous. But I think that Oklahoma City game was unbelievably bad, right? That was the second game Slater was at. I was just, they had no chance to win that game. He had no chance to win that game.
I just have this memory from that Clippers game of Slater and I driving across the Bay Bridge. And we had both seen the odds for that game. The Warriors were favored to win that game. And the whole time, I mean, we are ethically prevented from doing so, but we were just saying, man, lock, we should have just put all our money, just all our money. What the hell was everybody thinking? That's insane.
Yeah, it was like a pick 'em. It was like, who's going to win, Clippers or Warriors?
I just have this image of you two driving together like the opening montage of Full House now, just like smiling and listening to a song together, talking about gambling or something.
That's pretty true.
I don't know. You just said that, and it just immediately flashed that for John Stamos and Bob Saget or something. And Ethan, you're Bob Saget, that's for sure.
There's a pick.
But yes, wings are how you stay in those games. That's how you, like, if they're good, we'll see if they're good. But D'Angelo Russell is not how you stay in those games. It's tough-minded wings who scrap around, keep you in it defensively, maybe hit a shot or two. That's why I think of the Oklahoma City game. They had nothing. I think Steph shot a lot and didn't make a lot, but yeah. But they had not. They couldn't stick to the wings. They couldn't play transition. They didn't have that two-way toughness. And we'll see if it's Oubre and Wiggins, but it's a lot better shot than what they had.
D'Angelo Russell actually got ejected in that game, I remember. It was very weird. It was second game, and he got in the ref's face and got tossed. At a time where I remember they were kind of mad at him because it was like, dude, they're so shorthanded already and you're just getting tossed. And then one thing I remember, Steven Adams had 19 rebounds or something. And that was when we also learned not only did they have the wing trouble, the center spot was in chaos because Cauley-Stein, who was supposed to start, had the foot sprain. He's not even playing. That night before, Steve Kerr had come out and said, Kevon Looney has neuropathy and we have no clue when he's going to be back. He's searching for answers. And then so suddenly it was Marquise Chris, who was a camp invite, was their starter, and Spellman. And Chris was talking that night about how, I play center, but there's different levels of center. Steven Adams is kind of a hard guy to move off the block. And I even still reference that back when we were talking about the need for Wiseman this summer, because it was Marquise Chris is 6'9". They don't have a actual center. We can talk about the nightmare start and the fact that, Wiseman and Green aren't there. But if those two are there, we can continue to talk about how this is a much deeper team than last year's team.
I'm predicting right here a Kevon Looney renaissance. I'm predicting it. I'm throwing it out there.
Define his renaissance for you. What's his renaissance?
Just play games. Just
that's
kind
of
games.
Important. Yeah.
I'm saying good rotation player. I'm saying what he was before this. I remember what happened, I think, is inextricably linked to how he got hurt in the finals, and then there was just no rest or turnaround time to really improve the body. He's had a lot of time to heal. He looks to have been working on his shot. It looks pretty smooth, I guess. I think he wants to stretch the floor. He knows how to play. And suddenly you have this situation where Draymond isn't really into camp in the way that you would expect, and you've got Wiseman being out. There's a little bit of a Looney lane. I'm just throwing it out there. I think people are burying Looney too quickly.
I can already see that as a headline on The Athletic. Strauss quote, the Looney lane, and why it'll save the Warriors.
The Looney lane.
I'll get a memo about how it's not SEO friendly, by the way.
Oh, so, yeah. Literally not SEO friendly.
For me, it was the Phoenix game. For me, that game, when they were down, like, what was it, 40 in the first quarter?
Did you even watch that game? And weren't you wandering around by the locker room by that point?
That game was over by the time I was wandering around, right?
That was one of the problems with Steph getting hurt. It was like, he probably should have been on the bench by that point. Yeah, I mean, they were down 30.
It was over.
First quarter was so bad. It was so bad, yeah.
They looked bad, but you know what? In part, if we connect it all, it's connected to what Slater says they were missing. Just the absence of wings crushed them. They were worse than people knew. Hollinger's right to point that out, that it was, even with Steph, they looked like garbage, but I think that they've done some good work in addressing the reason for that. And so I'm not really at the 11th in the way that Hollinger is. I completely understand the argument. I do think that there should be some hedging according to Steph's health, but I like some of their roster moves. I like the idea of them being able to swarm and guard. And I like, as Slater was saying, their depth. So I think fringe playoffs. Are we all thinking fringe playoffs, lower seed?
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
So I have come to believe the big threshold, the big pivot point, and I mentioned this, me and Marcus were just on the Hoops Adjacent pod, but the sixth seed is so important this year, because if you're 7, you have to be in a play-in tournament against 10 and 9, and probably against a pretty good team, a Phoenix or somebody down there in the 10. And even if you win that play-in tournament, if the standings go as we predict, you're winning to get into the first round to face probably one of the LA teams who we expect to be 1-2, Lakers, Clippers. And that's just trouble. That's just a one-round disappointing, you're out. If you even get past the play-in now that
well,
exists.
Well, Clippers, I don't trust the Clippers to win
the
playoffs.
Okay, all right. Well, we can get – I'm going to pick the Clippers to win the title, as I mentioned last week. But
whoa!
To me, the sixth seed is you avoid the play-in and you might get Denver, Utah, Dallas. You know, that to me is toss-up range. I mean, we'll see how all these teams, you know, formulate, and we'll have probably different opinions on some of these teams. But I just think, to me, the sign of a successful season for the Warriors and what they should be aiming for is the sixth seed, or obviously, you know, 5 or 4 is fine. But if it's below sixth seed, like, that's dangerous.
Yeah, I like him at the 6. I mean, again, it's a lot of things have to roll their way. But Some other teams might be a little shaky too. We don't know. We don't know if Phoenix can take.
They are shaky. The yeah. They are shaky.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We don't know. Yeah, we don't We're know a lot shaky. Of things. You're shaky. I'm shaky.
Everybody's
the whole world's
shaky.
Shaky right now.
Everybody's 20, shaky.
2020
right now.
Shaky. But and maybe we overestimate this in some way because we've seen it. We've seen Steph at his best lift everybody else up. And it didn't happen last season, but he was only played three or four games and D'Angelo Russell was almost a weight on him. It was not somebody he could make better. And I think we believe that he can make Wiggins better, and I believe he certainly can make Oubre better. We'll see with Wiseman. We've seen it. And maybe Steph, and maybe we're just saying, okay, we want to see if he's got one more season of this. Maybe that's it. Maybe two more seasons. But I think he does have it. They're certainly, you know, missing all but four games last season. Doesn't disprove anything. I think we've seen him do this in a lot of ways over time, and less so in the Durant years, but we saw it before that. And I think he can make some of these guys pretty good. And then if they're pretty good and he's really good, they can be a team, you know, in a regular 82-game season that could win 46, 47 games. In 72 games, I don't know what the ratio back down to that is. But I think they could, like they could 42, they'd be that, 41, yeah, they 42. Could be that kind of team. Like a 42 and 30, something like that. Yeah, I mean, that seems a little bit high, but 40 and 32, right in there. I think they're that level of team. I do think if they get off, if they don't like crap out on this East Coast trip right off the bat, I think, you know, they get a couple early wins. They get some kind of momentum. They're not counting on Alec Burks and ISO to get them their key buckets. I think they can be a decent to solid to actually pretty good team.
Dallas is the doppelganger, whatever you want to say, where Luka Doncic, Steph Curry, who's going to have a better season? And to me, they're singular forces offensively on their team somewhat. I think whoever has a better season has a better shot at the MVP and has a better shot at a higher seed. I would say most national NBA pundits right now would say Dallas. Doncic in Dallas. And that's where I think the Warriors can maybe surprise, is being better than a Dallas, being better than a Portland, who I think their offseason was a bit overrated. Beyond the two LA teams, and according to Ethan, only one of the LA teams.
Yeah, what are you going to say? The Clippers are finished? Clippers out of the playoffs? Done.
No,
done.
No, he wants the Warriors to face the Clippers. That's what he wants. Yeah, he's predicting an upset early.
Look, I'm not saying that you want it. I'm not saying that you're delighted to play them. I am saying that maybe we wait for them to make the conference finals before we really pump them up like that. That's all I'm saying. And I do think, I love their roster. I thought they had the best roster last season. But now I do have some questions that if you don't really have a high-level point guard leading your attack and you are just counting on your wing strength and the chemistry is not great, I do think that there are a lot of questions surrounding the Clippers, and I just don't look at them as the behemoth that I once did. I do look at it now as Lakers are in a tier of their own, and then it's everybody else.
I think an embarrassed team is a dangerous team. I think they're going to take this season a lot more serious.
Say Ibaka. I know you want to bring up Ibaka. Say it.
I will get there. I think that you're somewhat underrating Luke Kennard, because I think the entire world doesn't understand that Luke Kennard's actually a pretty solid player because he played in Detroit and nobody watched any of their games. But I think he was like 15 points, 5 assists, can really shoot it from 3. Like, I think he helps them. And then, yeah, I think Ibaka's better than Montrezl Harrell. Like, do you guys disagree with me on that?
Well, better than the Harrell we saw at the end of the season, no question.
Better maybe not fit, better, fit yeah, for what
yeah,
they need.
Better fit. Better fit. Better player. Guy. Yeah, better guy that you could put on the floor at the end of games, important situations, no question. I don't know that he's a better player, but you know,
it depends
Harrell,
on what
again,
you need.
Yeah, and the Harrell that we saw in the playoffs was a lesser version of the Harrell that we'd seen all season. But yeah, it doesn't really work with Kawhi. It doesn't really work with Paul George. I totally agree with you on that. But I don't want to quite overestimate Ibaka. I mean, he's a solid player who can hit some outside shots and defend the rim. Those are all things they needed, no question. And he and Zubac as a tag team is really nice. I really like that. But I don't want to go too high on Ibaka. I think Harrell, we saw the worst of Harrell, and we saw Doc just keep trying to play him, and it just didn't
That's
work.
The other change this offseason, Doc's gone, Ty Lue's there. That might be
Although, as Doc says, hey, Ty was sitting right next to me for all these things that you blame me for, right?
Yeah, that was right funny, there. Right? That was I hope good. It's different, right? It might be the same.
You think these decisions were just me? You don't think Ty Lue was making some of these decisions? it's hilarious.
The other thing, as rotten as that Clipper situation clearly was, as declined as Montrezl Harrell looked, they were still up 3-1 on the Nuggets and up like 20 in each game to close it out and just kept blowing it. Like, they should have been in the West Finals against the Lakers. And if they were, I would say it probably would have been a 50-50 split. Like, Vegas probably would have been like, pick them in that West Final. So, like, they were right there. They just, the chemistry and all that weirdness eventually sunk them, but I think some of that might be gone. That's why I'm high on them.
One of the reasons I'm down on them always remains too much Lou Williams. Too much. Like, how many
times? You're going to get less Lou Williams this year.
Yeah, Lou Kennard, baby. Learn the name.
It's just, I agree with you on Lou Kennard.
Yeah, it's just like, how many times have you seen over the years a team just stops playing offense, hands the ball to Lou, and you go do something? And he puts up a wild shot, mostly times doesn't go in, and it's a dunk on the other side because the offense is totally out of balance positionally. I just think it's a bad way to finish games, especially in the playoffs. I am in the extreme minority on this because I know the world loves Lou Williams. He's a great guy. They cannot have their offense come down to Lou go get five shots at the end of the game in playoffs. They cannot do it, and that's what we saw.
I don't know if anybody's disagreeing with after watching the play,
seen it happen. Like,
The Lou Williams pick and roll is just not it.
Not having an elite guard again, I mean, Kawhi.
It was Lou Williams. Yeah, it was Lou Williams. Yeah, that's the problem.
But not having an elite, just, you know, Kyle
and the other
Lowry
option was Reggie Jackson, TK's other guy.
Yeah, two guys.
He's back.
Hey, Reggie Jackson did win one major playoff game. I mean, that he had that great game
and
six
cried on
Memphis.
The floor.
We got to discuss, do you know, the quick fix that is apparently available to the Warriors. You guys are talking 6th seed, 7th seed, even 11th seed. There's a move out there that could get them to the 3 seed. Right. Reportedly, James Harden has indicated that he is open to a trade to Philadelphia or other contenders.
Oh, he's open to a lot of
things. Doesn't that include the Dubs? who's on board for Harden to the Warriors if it's not sacrificing Wiseman?
I would be on board just to see the video of Steve trying to coach him. like their introductory first time.
Just for that. You that.
Yeah, no. James, you have to move without the ball. Like, you have to run over there when Steph has it here. I think that would be very amusing. Hey, listen, we know the Warriors are going to, Joe Lacob and Kirk Lacob are going to perk up their ears at any big name, and I don't dispute the value in being in the deal flow, as they call it, but I can't see two people playing on the Warriors with James Harden. Steve Kerr coaching him and Steph Curry playing with him. I cannot see those two things happening. So unless you're getting rid of those two, and judging by what Marcus wrote yesterday, I don't think they're getting rid of one of them. I cannot see how that would fit. And I don't think Harden would Harden want any part of that? I guess it would be if they got rid of everybody and just made it the Rockets all over again.
Well, in a funny way, it would be more tempting if he was acting different right now. He does not right now, with the way he's conducting himself, James Harden, look like, hey, I want to take a step back and move the ball and not be the guy and not get everything I want all the time. Those are not the vibes he's giving off right now. What is giving off right now?
You're saying the club in Vegas don't necessarily mean unselfishness, right?
Come on now.
I don't know. I'm saying he gave a $200,000 gift to Lil Baby. That's him saying I'm ready to give up the ball.
I'm generous. I'm very generous.
I'm unselfish, buddy.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, this is a whole aside as we're looking at it from a Warriors angle. But at a certain point, he's not disrespecting Tillman Fertitta.
Is he disrespecting Sam Presti?
He's disrespecting Adam Silver. I mean, this is not happening. James Harden became a star, I think, at the very end of Stern's regime, but this would not happen under
that's
David
another
Stern.
One for Ethan Drink Stern. Yep.
You'd fear a 50-game suspension off of this, and it's amazing.
50-game.
Yeah.
Listen, I'll just say, I think a lot of people are kind of, I shouldn't say the word using. I will not say using. I said it, but I'm going to move off it. The pandemic blurs a lot of lines. It just does. It's like, what's the protocol? Maybe, you know, maybe he feels he doesn't want to come in yet for certain reasons. We don't know. So I think he can still say some of that. And if he shows up for one practice or shows up for an exhibition game, he's going to say, listen, I had some issues. And we all can suspect otherwise. But this is the way this goes in this blurry world where we just don't know. We don't know these things about how people are feeling or reacting to the pandemic or want to react to the pandemic until they're supposed to play a game. And so I think this will come down to This might come down December 22nd, or if that's when they're playing their first game.
He's the guy who's taking it too far.
No question. No question. I mean, he's the guy who would.
It would be better if he was somewhere working out. Like, show me the social media videos yes. of him grinding. Like, the dude is yeah. in the club. Like, this is insane.
He's grinding like, in the club. He's grinding.
But he's saying, like, yo, I want out. Brooklyn, come save me. Philly, come save me. Come get me out the club? Like, why are they incentivized?
In a pandemic?
This is
in
what
a
he's pandemic? Doing. This yeah, is what yeah, he's yeah, doing.
Yeah, no
Post question. The videos working out. That's what you want
to
see.
He's killing his trade value because now the team he goes to won't have to give up so much to get him. It's the
genius. That's what I'm saying. He's working against himself.
Well, yeah. Well, he's working against because he's making it harder to trade him. You know the gif of Steve Kerr and Chris Paul where they're like laughing, fake laughing, and then they both turn and like Chris Paul's like, oh, I wasn't even laughing at that. That's how I would view the Steve Kerr, like Harden coaching situation. As far as like Warriors trading for him, again, we were asked this on last podcast we did and I made this same point. I just wouldn't mortgage any of the future for Harden because of all the things that you guys have mentioned, the fit problem and where his career seems to be going. The other thing we haven't mentioned.
And he's 31.
Yeah, he's getting worse. Like he was getting worse in the playoffs. And then like the only way I would entertain the conversation, and this is going to scare Warriors fans, if they were just saying Klay Thompson for like James Harden, like contract swap, like Harden's a better contract at this point.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think Hollinger said on my podcast last week, like the Warriors pick, the Minnesota pick, and Wiseman. And it's like, and Clay. Like, I get it. I understand the value there. It's not with the Warriors. It's just not with the Warriors. And I don't think Harden would think that either. It would make things interesting. It would be potentially more competitive. But Ethan and I talk about this, and Ethan's got me transfixed by this Minnesota pick now. It's like, I'm watching every single guy that they, and they're all named Jalen, I just realized. I was trying to, like, why am I confused?
Bumper
why
crop.
Am I confused
Bumper
about that? Like, I can't really tell their names different. I was wondering why. They're all named, three of the top six guys are named Jalen. So that's my excuse. But every time I look at them, and Evan Mobley, that's the one who's not named Jalen, but they're all freaking good. Oh my God.
And they all play for a college team that wears blue. And it's like, wait, Duke, Kentucky, yeah, wait,
Gonzaga, sort of. But yeah, they're just like, they're all really good. And Cade, that's the other one.
I've been watching those games.
I told Ethan, I've watched like five of these guys, and every single one of them I would have taken number one. Every single one of them I would have taken number one this season.
They're smart basketball players, too. That's the thing I'll write about a little bit, but you know, that's the thing I didn't know because you hear about these guys coming to this draft and you think, oh, these scouts are excited because these dudes are super athletic and they project onto that. And, you know, you don't really, but then you watch them and, you know, whether it's Evan Mobley or a range of the wings, and it's not just Cade Cunningham who knows how to play and knows how to pass. There are quite a few of these guys.
Dude, I love Zaire. Like, that dude is growing on me like crazy.
He's big. That guy's big. Well, and Jalen Johnson, right? That's the Duke guy. He's big. And they're all under control. They're not this, you know, just dive at the basket and forget about who's in front of them. Every single one of them I've liked. And I haven't seen Jalen Suggs that much from Gonzaga, who's supposed to be the best, right?
I mean, he's looking like Derrick Rose.
Oh, man, like he tore his Achilles on one of the games.
And then he came back in. I was like, what is
Yeah, he came back in. I was like,
he was like limping around. I was like, what are they doing?
He was crying on the sideline, it looked like. And then next thing you know, he's back in the game. I was like, oh, no, did he tear his Achilles?
It felt a little KD-like when they had him on the court. I was like, don't cut too hard.
I mean, maybe they get to that range of GMs believe so much in this draft that maybe you flip it. But yeah, to what DK was saying, with where James Harden is, I mean, he's the greatest player nobody wants to play with, if you believe the All-Star game drafting by the respective superstars. And he just doesn't seem to be a complimentary piece for anybody. It seems like he wants to play for a contender, but he's only appealing to teams that want to raise their floor and become competent and make the playoffs. And he's not conducting himself right now in such a way that teams that want contention think that he's going to fit in as opposed to fit out, as LeBron James once said. So here we are.
If the choice is between, let's say, just give up everything for Harden and maybe you turn into a 4 seed. I don't think any of us would think they'd be a top 3. Maybe, you know, I doubt it. Or, and so you're top 4, lose in the second round, third round, whatever, like Harden always does, I would point out. Or finish 11th in the Western Conference, like Hollinger says, without making that trade. Hey, you have that Minnesota pick and you're drafting 8th. If I'm the Warriors, I take that every single. Now, you lose a season, all that's not
every
good.
Every single time.
But, man, you draft 8th in this draft, and you have the Minnesota pick 2, by the way. And the Minnesota pick might even, yeah.
You're mortgaging the next decade for 2 years.
for a guy that you've proven can't do it. Like, you've literally proven it.
And you could have Wiseman, your pick, who could be one of those guys. Minnesota's pick could be one of those guys. There is your future. So there is no way I would do that.
You know, obviously, yes, there's a world Wiseman becomes an all-star center. There's a world you get the eighth pick and get a stud wing. There's also a world where those two assets are flipped into Bradley Beal, Ben Simmons, somebody who makes sense on a longer timeline than James Wiseman and is a fit.
Yeah, better basketball fit slightly. It's a good exercise. I'm glad. Like, there's guys like Hollinger can make us think about that. But yeah, I think we just thought through it.
I could make some of the argument for it. You could say, look, Steph's value is so much off the ball. Imagine if he was working off the ball and Harden was the guy dribble penetrating. I mean,
he'd never get the ball.
he'd be in the corner going, okay, I guess James is going to go to the free throw line.
I just want to see that. I want to see Steph working to come off all these screens, and he's hustling. Then he finally gets open on a relocation, some back pick, whatever, and he's free for that split second. But Hart is in his 17 dribbles move, right? Selling for the step back 30-footer.
I can't wait for the Zoom call where it's, you know, Synergy says, Steph, that you're just moving around in the first quarter a lot. And then by the third quarter, not at all. Is that a conditioning thing? Or I just want to see the response to that question if he's playing with James
over
Harden.
Under a number of clipboard survive.
No, yeah, that would be in the first week. It would be multiple.
But fans would talk themselves into it. If it happened, Warriors fans, I think, would be excited for a while.
I wonder if fans were in the stadium. Like, if fans were in a stadium, would Joe think of it, like, more? Would it be more of a consideration?
Yeah, he's not doing. They're not doing. They're not doing it.
Because they'd sell out Chase. They'd be. But again, like I said,
they both. They're always sold out.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. Right.
But yeah, they'd be the marketing. You'd have to watch every single game. But you know, Durant was a shaky, like at times, proposition for chemistry and for how this balanced out. And Kevin plays exactly the right way. Kevin is a wonderful thinking player and doesn't want to touch it all the time. He wants to touch it sometimes, but not all the time. The Harden thing at this point in time would just be, it would be hilarious. It really
would. What
would
their nickname be to replace the Splash Brothers? I mean, I'm sure Joe would want the marketing team hard to work on that. I mean, making
the
over
question is,
million
where
combined.
Would this recruiting happen? They went to the Hamptons for
the club. The club, come on.
They went to Hamptons for KD. James Harden would have them in Magic City.
Club, it'd be in the club.
The Magic City Five. That would be. So yesterday, Steph talked about on Monday. Steph talked about playing till 40 and perhaps even working out an extension that's beneficial to the team instead of taking.
Somebody
his
wrote
max.
An article about that.
Somebody was asking him about it. Yeah, I think it's interesting that there is wiggle room. You just see LeBron takes it to your boom. Harden turns down the extension. You just normally see this being very decisive, and I and Marcus and I have talked about this for several weeks. It's like, what's happening here with everyone else? It just seems to be a pretty clear cut decision, and with Steph, as Steph said in your column on the Zoom call, is that he wants to see. And I think both sides, maybe it's better if he does something else down the road. Maybe it's better if he waits. You know, normally you don't see that, but that's why, again, Steph is a different kind of NBA superstar. It's like he wants to kind of let it breathe and see where the best shot to be at. Now, this goes another year and he doesn't sign, and he's now a year away from free agency. This becomes a red light situation. It is not right now. Probably
and
won't
be. And Giannis signs the Supermax.
Yeah,
he signs. Set Milwaukee. I can see Bucks fans like, hey.
Yeah. Although I don't see Steph ended up in Milwaukee, but yeah,
Curry might have a problem.
Yeah, that might not be the way to go. But I do think that it is just indicative. Remember, like his math, he was a free agent after what 17, a free agent.
He could have signed
with anybody, and there was zero drama to that. Like nobody even like I'm sure teams like checked in with him, but we didn't hear about, hey, you know what, Mark Cuban's gonna make this huge pitch. Oh, the Knicks. There was none of that, and there is with every other superstar, like there is right now with Giannis. So it's just another example of Steph being the no drama guy. Until there's drama, we'll see. But at this moment, no reason for drama. He's just one of those guys who doesn't need to have this instant fix, this instant, like, I need to be rewarded now. He wasn't like that when he got the 4 for 44. You know, he said, like, my father told me, don't be looking at another man's pocketbook. Like, just don't look at that stuff. It's you get what you get. You get it in its time. And I think this is just another indication of how different he is than every other NBA superstar that we've dealt with.
Slater, you like the idea of Steph playing till 40? We've often talked about how, because he can shoot, like, his game will last. I mean, he said before, like, you know, 37, that's probably it. You know, Riley will be in high school and he's ready to go be a dad. And, you know, the contract that he could get would probably extend that one more year, maybe to 38. But he sounds like he's ready. He sounds like he's trying to go to 40. And if he's feeling good at 40, he's going to keep going.
It probably means he's feeling good now, right, in this moment. Because, you know, and you talk to guys who've retired, it's kind of a when you know moment. Maybe at 37, he's like, oh, I cannot do another year. David West had a comment somewhere the other day where he was talking about, like, I couldn't post up Josh Hart. And I was like, goodbye, league. But I do think it's encouraging that, like you said, Steph is entertaining this idea of 40, because it probably means he's like, whoa, man, I feel good. I'm about to have a good season this year. He keeps himself in such good condition. Like, he is the best conditioned athlete on their current team. He will be a contributing, as long as he stays healthy, he would be a contributing rotation player into his 40s. What will be interesting is, like, as he ages out of, like, singular offensive focus, and maybe he even ages out of being an all-star, like, I keep comparing it to Steve Nash, because Steve Nash had the MVPs into his early 30s, and then he was an all-star. I think he was the last an all-star at, like, 36, 37. But, again, when we talk about when guys decide to retire, it was suddenly done for Steve Nash, because he started having nerve stuff, and he's just like, it's awful for, he would say it was awful for him to even get his body to a point of being able to play on an NBA court. It took so much rehab work because he got to that age.
That might be a cope for Steve Nash. I kind of felt like he was just cooked as far as.
Do you remember how some of the health stuff he went through when he went to the Lakers, though? Like, he had nerve damage.
He wasn't able to play anymore. He would get trapped on pick and roll and he couldn't get out of it, is what I remember. And then you combine it with targeted on defense. And I think to what you're saying, that is true, that a lot of guys, they get older and it becomes about everything you have to do to get back on the court. That just becomes too much. I think the thing that Steph has, which is a little bit interesting, is the off ball thing. And that's why it's hard to compare. And I guess if you're optimistic about it, you would look at Reggie Miller, who, do we even know if Reggie Miller was washed when he left the league, or did he just decide to leave for whatever reason? Because it felt like he was productive for longer than just about any all-star of that era.
Yeah, I mean, it also becomes like, can you handle being a limited player, right? You're used to being the best player, then you become one of the best players, and then are you okay being the 100th best player?
It's what Carmelo Anthony has pretty publicly gone through the last 4 years.
And I would have expected that he would really have the toughest time. Like, here's somebody who was just, give me the ball, I'm just bucket, and he's adapted to it, taking the low number salary.
In Oklahoma City, it was a disaster. Me come off the bench. Remember when he's like, they're telling me I gotta come off the bench?
Nope. Yeah, I was like, nope. Yeah.
And then now he's gonna come off the bench in Portland this year. You know who probably is the flip side of that? Allen Iverson. Once Allen Iverson couldn't be Allen Iverson anymore, he just didn't want to be a bench player. Meanwhile, Vince Carter, great example of the other way. Like, the guy just reformed himself into, like, a great bench player.
And by the way, what's one of Steph's heroes, Vince Carter. Maybe his favorite player that he's ever seen. We'll see. I mean, you know, like, Kyle Korver, is he 40? You know, like, he, you know, again, I don't think Steph wants to be Kyle Korver, you know, wants to be Kyle Korver, but he could be. I mean, you know, this guy is somebody who could do that role. If the Warriors get a guy who, you know, a distributor, a big distributor who can guard people, like we always said with Monte, over and over, there's hunting for this big distributor who can guard people, then you can have the smaller two guard. Yeah, you can have that guy.
James Harden's a big distributor.
Yeah, oh, there you go. It's all about James Harden. You're right. Who can guard guys?
Everything, that's
right? Yeah, he can guard.
Well, he can. He just elects not to.
Wow, MT. Wow, wow. But, I mean, I think people have mentioned this over the years. If they got somebody like that, it could really add some years to Steph's career. If you're Steph's just your two guard, and he doesn't have to guard the great point guard anyway, and he could just be that floating around the perimeter and make a play or two, and then just if somebody sucks the defense in, boom, it's an automatic three. He'd be pretty good at that, I think, for a long time. I don't think you want him to be your point guard when he's 38 years old. Like, full-time, go guard people, that would be a tough thing. But that's still a long ways away.
I agree that who they have around him informs the trajectory, but maybe I'm too optimistic. I think that Steph's arc might surprise people in terms of how productive he can be just based on that off-ball shooting. How I think, did J.J. Redick have his best season last season? Am I right about that?
It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
I mean, yeah. These off-ball guys, the ability to shoot, they might be like quarterbacks in the NFL, some of these pocket quarterbacks who have lingered around a little longer than one might think. He might be that guy. And yeah, you don't want him anchoring the offense completely at age 38.
Do you guys think he is okay with deep into his 30s, maybe even to 40, being J.J. Redick? Or do you think the allure of business...
I mean, Steve Kerr is trying to do it to him every year already. No. I mean,
my goodness. But you know what? Like he becomes the fourth best player on a team. Do you guys think he's okay with that? Or do you think by the time
he
gets...
if there's any superstar that is okay with it, it's Steph. Like, if there's anybody who can find the vibe of it, it's Steph. He can go ahead and shift his mind and be in full Davidson mode. Like, it's all about the team, rah, rah, rah. Like, that's his epicenter. I don't think he'll have a problem with it, especially if he's on a good team and they're winning and productive. I mean, we always seen him do is give up, like, the crown, in a sense, you know? So I think he's built that way. I think there's a part of Steph that will always, like, love SoCon, right? Davidson, and just being part of a team. And like, I think that's his core, especially if, I think this is important, if Cannon can watch him play. I think that'll be a big deal, like, as he gets older. It's like, if Cannon ends up wanting, you know, interested in basketball, and his son gets to carry on that tradition of being at the games with his father, you know, I think he might stick around for that.
I think Steph has a role model in that, right? He has somebody that he remembers watching as a kid. And that's the other thing, is Dell played 16 seasons, as Steph always says. And Steph is clearly a better player than Dell. Not as big, but that's part of it. But like, clearly better. So why shouldn't he play 18, right? I mean, if Dell can make it through 16 with one great facet and maybe not so other some others, and Steph's probably got three great facets, maybe four, he should be probably, and I think he's in, and it's like, he would love to have that relationship with his sons, who like he watched his dad play and his son get to shoot around, you know, at Chase Center. That's a great point, Marcus. You should have written about that. That should be in the freaking in the column. It's a great point.
The one thing he has that guys like Redick and Korver or whoever, or even Dell at the time, don't have is he has like an international brand / like life and business waiting for him. At any point he decides to retire, he can do anything he wants and make
political
any amount of
office,
money.
Yes, you know, all that.
Whatever. You know what I mean? Like Kyle Korver, what's Kyle Korver retiring into? Being Kyle Korver. Like, you know,
right, he's going to be president of the United States.
Ouch!
Kyle Korver like catches strays?
Another off-ball guy.
Well, I will say, though, there's a lot of golf courses out there that Steph Curry might want to play. I would put that in there, too. Although, judging by what I saw on TV, maybe he shouldn't. He should play a little more.
I think he's going to play those.
By the way, we were Tim, because you are the resident golf expert. Marcus and I were on a podcast with Zach Harper, and Harper was just saying, because Harper, I don't think, has much respect for golf. Yeah, but Steph could be like a golf pro. He could be He could be a top. You know,
What
is your assessment on that?
I mean, I don't think even Steph would really, really say that in his heart of hearts. It's not just physical skills, and, you know, it's so much more. It's so much more. So, like, if he had started when he was 11, yes. Like, it's all he thought about was being a golf pro, but he can't do it right now. No chance. None. I mean, you saw the shots if you watched it all. I mean, it's not close to what Mickelson can do. Not even close. It's like, and Mickelson is a fading tour player. It's not close. No chance.
I have some enjoyable news for you guys.
Uh-oh.
Anthony Slaker needs to go do a Slaker podcast. I need to go do a Slaker podcast.
The infamous
that's
Slaker.
Right. We forgot about that.
Slaker time.
Go on there and defend putting
Slaker.
putting your Slakers on a tier of the Clippers.
These are the go things that entertain me, Ethan, and Marcus, the Anthony Slaker talk.
Whoever tweeted that knows who he is. It's Slaker
whoever
time.
Whoever you are who called him, who said, get Anthony Slaker off Warriors Plus Minus,
we
thank
were
you
dying.
For that.
We were dying.
Thank you
we
for
dying.
That. We absolutely, you have coined the nickname for the rest of his career, Anthony Slaker. That's a great way to dip. See you next week. We'll talk more. We should have. Should we have some Wiseman, Draymond information?
No, maybe not. Maybe not.
Still not.
We'll have more 2021 draft info.
We will probably have information on when they will return to practice by then. But
we'll have
lots more Michael Mulder talk.
All right, we are out of here.
Ah!